Hi, I'm Tim Williams, a Pioneer sales rep from Petrolia, Ontario, and this is the Pioneer Made to Grow podcast.
Thanks, Tim, and thank you for listening to the Pioneer Made to Grow podcast. I'm Andrew Campbell, and as a grain grower, choosing varieties or herbicide systems is part of the job. But as we get closer to the time that Pioneer is moving all their soybeans to the Enlist system, it puts a new kind of pressure on a grower like me, and maybe for you, to find those new varieties that will work well with both our management system and with our soil type. After all, for me, the bottom line has to be yield. That's why, in today's episode, we thought it would be a good idea to have that conversation. As more and more soybean varieties come to market under the Enlist system, now seems to be like the right time for me and maybe for you to switch over. So what's the best strategy to make that process as seamless as possible? For this conversation, we've got three great guests around the table all joining in. John Saliga is an area agronomist with Pioneer covering the southwest part of Ontario. Phil Emmett is a territory manager for Pioneer. And Chris Robson is on the Corteva side as a retail territory manager. John, Chris, Phil, thanks for joining the podcast, guys.
Pleasure to be here.
Hey, Andrew.
So, Phil, I'm going to start with you because we've had this Enlist soybean conversation in the past right here on the podcast. And if I remember back to, it was probably a couple of years ago we last had this conversation, and one of the things that stuck out in my mind was how many growers in the United States were growing it and what kind of the adoption was like here in Canada. Can you maybe kind of bring us up to speed? Like, has adoption in the United States continued to grow on Enlist? And just where is adoption across North America on this?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for the question, Andrew. And Enlist continues to be the increasingly the trait program of choice for sure in the United States. And I think when we last talked, we were probably around somewhere between 35 and 40% of the United States soybean crop. And this year we're going to be between 55 and 60% of the U.S. soybean crop will be traded with the Enlist program. And certainly those results are not just because, it's easy or something like that. It's got to be because it works well and probably works the best for those growers. So as it continues to increase and continues to grow. Last year we saw some territory swept completely from other trait programs to 98% Enlist. And it's because of that, because of those strong yield performance, and all the agronomic package that the Enlist trait brings, as well as the flexibility that is that Enlist herbicide system.
And I think, you know, for me, I think to myself, okay, if this has been a process in the U.S. for, you know, the last number of years, clearly it's obviously a priority on the research side, on the breeding side, on making sure that the absolute best genetics are in this system for those growers, which in the end means the best genetics for us as growers here in Ontario too.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, the Enlist system has been 100% the focus of our research program for the last 3 years from a breeding standpoint, but it's certainly been a huge focus for us for the last, you know, 7-8 years as we have brought varieties to market. So the ones that we are bringing to market now are the very best genetics with our best genetic packages. And that's why you're seeing excellent yield results this fall, as well as, you know, excellent results in terms of how clean these fields are. So really great agronomics matched up with great yields with the herbicide package in the background.
So then, John, I'm going to bring you in on this, kind of for the local perspective, because, you know, we're starting to see some big transition in acres here in Ontario to that Enlist system. Kind of give me a sense on what you see in field in action on all of this stuff. Like, is the performance kind of where you would expect and where we've seen other varieties, other systems perform?
Yeah, sure, Andrew. I would say that I'm probably fortunate to be in the two territories in the deepest southwest of the province. So we probably have the most robust lineup of products to choose from. And with the production plant being in Chatham and a lot of seed acres getting planted, we've had our share of experience with Enlist soybeans in the area, and I would say that, you know, in terms of yield potential, in terms of how these products are performing, we're seeing a really nice experience for the growers that have made that transition, and the seed growers that have been producing the seed have had a good experience as well. So we're only anticipating better growth and improved yields as we bring new products to the marketplace. And we're, you know, once again, this fall, we'll be looking at our newest experimentals that are pre-commercial, and we'll be making advancement decisions on those products for the marketplace. It's pretty exciting because what we're seeing, we really like.
So then I want to get to the conversation, as I kind of mentioned off the top, for me personally as a grower, some of the things that I, you know, when I make this switch, you know, next year, some of the things I need to kind of walk through. But if we can even step back kind of a little bit further, and Chris, I'm going to point this question to you. Give me an idea. What are some of the advantages, particularly when we talk about weed control? What are some of the advantages in the Enlist system over other ones?
So I think the biggest differentiator in the Enlist system, so they're all E3 soybeans. So E3 mean they're tolerant to glyphosate, 2,4-D, specifically 2,4-D choline, or what you would get in the Enlist herbicide, you know, package that you would buy from your retailer, and then tolerant to glufosinate or Liberty as well, too. So you get three modes of action, you know, built in that the plant is highly tolerant to, so that you can, you know, kind of mix and match depending on the weed spectrum that's there. But ultimately, the biggest difference is when you compare it to a dicamba system versus the Enlist system is the ability to use the Enlist chemistry and Liberty safely in crop. So we'll talk about near zero volatility. So you've heard off target movement, certainly with dicamba in the U.S. and probably, you know, a number of listeners have experienced it locally too, where, you know, we talk about volatility, so gassing out that plant, you know, lifting and then moving somewhere else. With Enlist, we'd love to say never ever, but highly unlikely that it's going to lift and move due to volatility, as long as we're using all our, you know, normal due diligence. So, you know, watch your wind, certainly. You know, nozzle selection is going to be a, you know, key in that. We can touch on that in a minute if it comes up. But the biggest piece is that you have 2,4-D that you can use in crop safely. You have Liberty that you can use in crop safely. You can mix 2,4-D and Liberty and use that in crop safely. And then you do have glyphosate in that back pocket too, you know, if something changes, right? The other ability, you know, that I think separates the systems apart is the fact that you can use Liberty up to R1, so beginning flower, and then you have the 2,4-D choline and glyphosate that you can use all the way up to R2, so full flower. So hopefully we've started clean and stayed clean up to that point, but if you know, plan A didn't work and you need a, you know, a rescue option, that you have options in your back pocket that you can use late and quite safely.
And then in terms of, you know, the weeds that I'm really trying to control or that I have to control in the future, obviously we've had these herbicide resistant weeds come in. It's not new for our farm. The whole reason we kind of switched systems in the first place was fleabane. What are some of the other ones coming up where you think this system might actually hold an advantage for a grower like myself?
The thing with fleabane is traditionally you get a couple of flushes. As long as you get ahead of it off the bat, usually you're good for the rest of the season. Where things really start to separate is when we get talking about water hemp, and then thank gosh, I don't have it down here yet, but you know, there is mention of Palmer amaranth in Ontario now too. But the biggest differentiator between water hemp and fleabane, if you haven't experienced water hemp yet, is that it germinates all year long. So it'll start as soon as the weather is nice in, you know, March or April, and likely still germinating now if the weather's conducive. So the trick with it is, if you don't get ahead of it off the bat, if you don't use a good residual program, if you don't get canopy closure kind of thing and allows those weeds to keep coming, you're going to need in-crop options to help you get ahead of it. So you think about the, you know, the dicamba system, it's a very effective chemistry, but the trick is that on July 20th, when it's hot and humid, you know, trying to find days when you're on label to go spray it is really, really hard. And then if you're next to something sensitive, you know, down here we have tomatoes and greenhouses and different things, you know, the odds of being able to use that safely are really, really slim. So you know, the ability to have 2,4-D, which is quite effective on water hemp. You know, glyphosate, for the most part, we're going to assume it's all glyphosate resistant. But, you know, if you get it, it's a bonus. But you have Liberty in your back pocket. And the other, I think, differentiator between the two systems is the fact that you can use Liberty and your R240 choline together. So it's been a really popular mix in the U.S. I wouldn't say that's a planned approach. But, you know, if water hemp is coming through and you get the, you know, that, you know, you go to the field and you have some really large weeds that you need to control, it offers you a really significant in-crop hammer to go after broadleaves.
So now, you know, the sales pitch has been made. This seems like a good move for our farm. Phil, if I'm going into those conversations this fall with my Pioneer sales rep, you know, he's a guy that I, you know, do count on and kind of lean on quite a bit for helping me pick kind of the right varieties. But give me an idea. What are some of the questions that I should be asking? What does that conversation look like in terms of, like, we're picking new varieties completely here. You know, what's that process look like for both of us to make sure we get the right ones?
Yeah, so I think in that situation, you're going to want to just maybe spend some time just understanding how these might be a little bit different, or what can I expect compared to what I'm used to, right? So I'm used to whatever bean. Here's the things I liked about that. What does this new one offer in relation to that? And I think that's a good understanding. Are these going to be quicker out of the ground? Or are they going? What do these offer? What do these offer as well as just being enlist? Is that the only thing it offers, or does it offer some additional agronomics? Like, is it really good on white mold? Does it offer some soybean cyst protection? What other things does this new variety bring as in addition to being a new bean? Because I think what we're going to find, and I think most growers are going to find, is that the system is really in the background. These new varieties offer a lot of things in addition to the system. So they do offer very good yield. They do offer very good agronomics. They are going to offer, you know, great maturity, good dry down, all those things that our growers are used to and demand, as well as a great flexible herbicide package.
Well, because it is one of those that I found over the last, you know, especially the last few years, how much more mindful I have to be, and not just, you know, okay, this bean is good on this soil type, but man, I need it to also be protected from white mold and nematode and like a whole bunch of different things that seem to really want to attack the beans around here, Phil. So it's one of those things of that conversation does seem like it's a good one to have with my rep about, just to make sure we get the whole package in a bean.
Well, for sure. And I think, you know, I think we're asking a lot of these crops now, and that makes sense, right? Land is not what the price of land was 15 years ago. So we expect greater yields than we expected 15 years ago. You know, so I think no different than an Olympic athlete. They are much more prone when things go wrong. Think of these varieties as we need them to be able to manage and bring help when some of these diseases or some of these other factors play.
So then, John, in terms of, you know, okay, I have this conversation with my sales rep. Now give me an idea in terms of, you know, how I'm going to properly plan. What might be, is there anything different I need to think about going into the 2024 growing season when I am switching the varieties to make sure I'm setting myself up for success on that yield?
Sure. I think, you know, for all intents and purposes, you're not going to change a lot of what you've done in the past. You're going to select the maturity that you're comfortable with and what works for you in terms of what your cropping rotation is. You want to make sure that you're focused on the most prevalent disease package that you need, and certainly, cyst nematode is one of the things that we deal with regularly in southwestern Ontario. And fortunately for us, our breeders have done a great job of incorporating a blend of the Peking and the 88788 sources soybean cyst resistance. So we have the options for growers to deploy the trait that they would like to use or the source that they would like to use. I think, and in my area of Ontario, we're definitely seeing where we need to start rotating that source. So having that opportunity is really important, and growers should know, in a sense, know what they are looking for and talk to their sales rep about that. 2023 is certainly turning out to be a white mold year, obviously. So pay attention to the white mold scores on your varieties. Our breeders do a great job of characterizing our products. We put a lot of in-field data into the database to help understand that for our growers. And, you know, nothing is risk-free in agriculture. There's always risks that our growers have to face. But with the robust lineup of products that we have and how well our sales reps understand those products, growers should be able to mitigate and manage that risk effectively.
So then my big question is, like, what am I giving up in yield on this? I think that's a big question a lot of growers have, is I'm used to, I'm comfortable, I've had success with variety A, B, and C over here. Am I giving anything up? You've seen the data, you've seen the yields already, John. What am I looking at here?
Yeah, and certainly, you know, our Extend lineup has been a stellar lineup to this point in time. Growers have had tremendous experiences with those products, and I can confidently say that our breeders are doing exactly what they said they were going to do. They are bringing our elite germplasm into the marketplace with that Enlist trait. What we have for yields this year are probably in some ways exceeding our expectations with the amount of rain that we had through the middle of the summer. We're very, very pleased with the performance that we're seeing. And like I said earlier, looking forward to the next set of advancements, it just, you know, it continues to get better and better, which is the job of every seed company, is to bring better products to the marketplace for our customers.
So then with that, Chris, you know, here, you know, I get my varieties picked. I've got, you know, kind of John's advice here in terms of, you know, things that I can do through the season to make sure that I am looking after that yield. But at the end of the day, the bottom line is the change in this is the herbicide program. So give me an idea in terms of laying it out. I'm used to, you know, kind of here's the program we have and it seems to work. What's the best way to attack this Enlist system to make sure that it works, as if not even more effectively, you know, at controlling all of those weeds?
I think, you know, the biggest piece that I think any chemical rep will certainly preach is going to be the need for residual. So I don't think it matters which system, you know, we're talking about, the need to have a good residual chemistry to keep weeds small. We talk a lot about weed resistance, so the more modes of action and effective modes of action we can throw at a lot of these weeds to keep them guessing and keep systems viable for as long as we can, is certainly going to be, you know, number one, regardless whether we're talking like Extend, Enlist, IPs. You know, we talked about water hemp earlier. There's five-way resistant water hemp, or at least water hemp, you know, that's resistant to five different chemistries out there. So the need to use a good residual to keep it at bay and keep things guessing is going to be paramount for the whole industry kind of going forward. So I can't say that enough, and I don't think, you know, any chemical company would argue, you know, the fact that using a good residual setup chemistry is going to be paramount going forward. But the other big changes that growers will need to kind of think about is tank clean out. So if you've been a dicamba user in the past, it can get hung up in the plastic. You know, that sprayer, or if you have a little bit of residual kicking around, it takes very, very little dicamba and off-target beans to elicit a response. So, you know, make sure you're doing that good tank clean out kind of prior when you're switching systems. We've had growers this year that have done, you know, a reasonable job cleaning out or to the best of their ability, but left some glyphosate in the tank or left some Liberty in the tank, which happens to be really, really good tank cleaners, and it peeled a little bit of dicamba out of some plastic and, you know, elicited a response in some Enlist beans. So you may see some of that. I don't think there's a, you know, a lot you can do as a grower to completely prevent that other than try and do your best to do a good, you know, good tank clean out. I mentioned nozzles earlier, so that's going to be another kind of change, but not a drastic change. You know, when we moved to the Extend system, they wanted an extremely coarse nozzle, so you got big water droplets, so that chemical fell, and, you know, and hopefully limited that volatility concern. The give up with that is that you give up a little bit on coverage. So I do want growers to move down in nozzle size to either a coarse or extremely coarse nozzle. We'll get a little bit better coverage that way, which is nice. So when we think about weed efficacy, but I don't want that you know, the dicamba tip, for lack of a better term, that you've likely been using the last couple of years. So most growers likely have, you know, coarse to, you know, ultra coarse nozzle on the farm already. So hopefully, you know, no need to go out and buy something that you don't likely already have. You know, water volume, you know, standard, typically, you know, 10 to 15 is fine. When we get talking Liberty, that is going to be a bit of a change. If growers aren't used to spraying with Liberty, they're going to want to think about spraying on a hot, humid, sunny day. Liberty works so much better when the weather conditions are right, and then it does need increased water volume. So kind of a minimum of 20 water, you know, 20 gallons per acre to, you know, to make that system work well. And then in terms of everything else, the Enlist chemistry has a built-in drift retardant in it. So, you know, it takes drift way, way down, but drift is still going to be your number one off-target concern. You know, long as we're using the other kind of best practices that we talked about. So, you know, watch your wind speed, you know, watch, you know, direction if it's blowing against something sensitive. You know, same rules you do with any chemistry that you're out spraying. But say tank clean out is certainly going to be key, you know, when you're starting from one system to the other. Like I said, potentially switching nozzles and then just getting used to working with some of the new chemistries, right?
So it sounds, you know, straightforward enough in terms of, you know, with a couple of little adjustments, all of this process seems like it's very doable for us around our farm going through all of these stages. My last question here before we wrap up is, like, how many of you think it's a good idea for me to run two different systems? Because there's always that little bit of me that says, okay, maybe I can ease my way into this change. Show of hands, how many think that's a good idea? Because I have a feeling it's maybe not. No one's jumping on and supporting the idea.
I mean, can it be done, Andrew? It can be done. The level of complexity, I think, is much greater, right? It's records, it's cleanouts, it's all those things. I guess my concern back would be what is the need to, right? And I don't think there is a need to run both systems. I think the level of complexity is so much greater to make sure that we're clean out and we aren't putting, you know, Enlist one on our Extend beans or Extendamax or dicamba on our Enlist beans. It's like running an extra crop, and that's probably how it needs to be looked at.
Yeah, and Andrew, I'd like to add one thing there. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about the sprayer and keeping things organized and on track with the sprayer, but the mishaps that we've already had some experience with, and I can share some of those, it starts with the seed. So, you know, it's 10 o'clock at night and you need 12 bags to finish a field, and you send somebody to the barn and they grab some beans. A lot of beans are beans in the shop or in the barn, and it just so happens that they're a different trait package. You put those in the planter, you finish a field, you have the same outcome as if you would have put the wrong chemical in the sprayer, right? So those are, you know, those are things that come to mind when you talk about running two separate two different programs in the same year. It does create an added level of risk. It can be done, like Phil said, but it definitely increases risk.
Well, and I even when you mentioned that, I think, okay, then we have to pull the air cedar home and get it cleaned out between varieties, because obviously we can't, you know, even a little bit, you know, you're wasting that seed if you think it's going to survive. And, you know, even making sure, you know, we try really hard in record keeping. We're better than we used to be, but I won't pretend that our record keeping is even perfect, that this variety we know made it in that field. So I do appreciate that and think you're probably right that the only reason I would keep two is to just have some level of comfort that I don't even think I really need. So really, gentlemen, I appreciate all of you in walking me through kind of what's going through my head, and I think what's going through a lot of growers' heads as this change gets made, and as we see by 2025, all these Pioneer beans are going to be Enlist traded beans. So Chris, John, Phil, thanks very much for joining the podcast today.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thanks, Andrew.
And thank you for listening to the Pioneer Made to Grow podcast. On behalf of the entire team working behind the scenes on the show, we appreciate you listening. If you haven't already, you can always check out past episodes of the show in podcast apps like Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. You can even now find video versions on YouTube by searching Pioneer Made to Grow podcast or looking up the Corteva Canada channel. You can follow Pioneer Seeds on Twitter at the handle Pioneer Seeds CA or my personal handle, Fresh Air Farmer. And don't forget, if you're ever looking for more information or advice, just ask your local Pioneer rep or visit pioneer.com/Canada.